Namaste. Good morning, good evening to everyone. Today, I would like to speak a bit about the Guru and the Guru principle, because on 10th July is the sacred occasion of Guru Purnima, which is a full moon dedicated to the Guru. Many in the West may not be aware of this tradition in India, but it is the day when, across the land, gratitude is expressed to the Guru for the light that has been shown on the disciple's path. Now, by Guru is not meant just a spiritual guru. Even teachers are considered as gurus, teachers in school, in the creative arts, dance, and so on. And therefore, all their students on this special day express their gratitude and reverence. You see, the guru-disciple dynamic, the teacher-student dynamic, in this case, the spiritual teacher-student dynamic, is unlike any other relationship because the guru is not apart from the disciple. One could say the guru is the higher self of the disciple. So this relationship transcends ordinary human relationships. Now, on the path of knowledge, Gyan Yoga, the word guru represents not only the physical form of the guru, but the guru principle, consciousness. The form of the formless is the physical form of the guru. The manifest guru is, one could say, the form of the unmanifest, because we are living in a world and a dimension of forms. So the unmanifest too takes the shape and form of a being, which is termed as the guru. Now, I would like to read out to you about two or three sentences which throw light on the guru and the guru principle. This is by the Sufi mystic Radha Mohan Lal, who was affectionately called as Bhai Sahib. After we go through this brief exploration, then I would be very happy if anyone would like to ask questions or share whatever they wish to. According to Radha Mohan Lal, the night can last for a whole life without the guru. The night can last for a whole life without the guru. Now, what does this mean? This night, this darkness, is the darkness of the ego with its sense of doership. It is the ignorance. It is the unawareness. The mundane life which we keep living day after day without asking questions, like, what is this life about? Who am I? And so on and so forth. So the night can last an entire life for most of us. Now, when the guru steps in, the representative of consciousness, it brings us to a new way of seeing things. The ego has built its defenses, constructs since childhood, and built wall after wall after wall between me and the other to protect itself. The ego is constantly running after pleasures and running away from pain, event by event by event. And then a turning point comes. Consciousness itself bestows its grace upon a certain being amongst many, and kindles this flame, this desire to know, is there more to life? And this new way of seeing the world, people in my world, events that happen to me, and my relationship with myself, I find brings about a paradigm shift in the degree of peace that I feel in daily living. The torment of the thinking mind, the anxiety and stress gifted by the thinking mind, is now being put to rest because the guru is bestowing The singular vision, the eye of singularity, seeing the world through the third eye and not through the physical eyes of duality. So, in other words, when I start living my life through this new way of apprehending the world, one could say that the guru consciousness, the guru principle, is now functioning through me. That is the gift of consciousness, certainly not a small gift. So when old patterns, habits, tendencies, blame, condemnation, ill will, spite, hatred, jealousy, malice, envy, arrogance, guilt, and shame start dropping away, then that light of consciousness starts shining brighter and brighter. The light shineth in the darkness. The veil of Maya has been lifted by the hand of the Guru. When I see the hand of God above all, that everyone is an instrument shaped by their conditioning, genetics, nature, saying what they say and doing what they do based on that, all these negative qualities fall by the wayside. You could say, I am no longer obsessed with others like I used to be, and I'm now obsessed with the light of consciousness because I see the one behind the many. So it is a journey of awareness in which darkness cannot survive. Besides love and limitless patience towards all, humility is the essential virtue that is required. I'm going to repeat this. Besides love and limitless patience towards all, humility is the essential virtue that is required. The disciple knows that his spiritual progress is not of his own making, since it's the guru's work and that he makes no effort himself. He constantly feels that he's at the beginning of his career. You see, this love towards all is not referring to the dualistic love we are familiar with. It does not mean we have to go around hugging everyone and loving everyone as individuals. This love is the total acceptance of the other, whether I like them or not. A total acceptance of the other the way they have been made. It is like a choiceless love. To the degree that sometimes you really feel that the person who's hurting you, you feel perhaps now compassion arises for them. Because what must they have gone through in their lives to be hurting you? It becomes one big cosmic joke. As my teacher would say, no human being can hurt you unless it is your destiny to be hurt. In which case, the instrument through whom the hurt happens is irrelevant. You see, what this does is it demolishes personhood. We are so eager to crucify some individuals in our lives. That eagerness evaporates. We are so eager to crucify ourselves. That eagerness evaporates. So, this thing about love. As I often quote the American mystic Joel Goldsmith, who said something very beautiful in his early days of spiritual inquiry, he reached the conclusion that it was not possible for him to love some people in his life. It was quite a quandary for him. The rest of it he had figured out. But he said, I just could not get myself to love some people in my life. And then the breakthrough happened. He said to God, God, I can't love them. I've tried my best. So you love them through me. Lastly, I will read this out, three or four lines. Nevertheless, we can already try to meditate, to remain peaceful, to merge constantly in the Guru, to think of him alert, vigilant, intense. At any time, like the married woman who has a lover and never stops thinking about him despite all her occupations. You see, for me, I could not understand a statement like this. But then I realized that when I started visiting my spiritual guide, and mind you, I didn't consider him my guru from day one, I was like my friends being brought up in a very Western education system in Mumbai, quite ignorant as well as arrogant about the concept of the guru. So it took me time to realize that this person I was visiting every Sunday was indeed my guru. And for me, the turning point was that since I met him, everything in my life I viewed through the prism of what he was saying. It was automatic. So I started by saying the guru is the form of the formless. So any situation would come, especially an unpleasant one. My thought was, what would he say about this? What would he do about this? So it was for me a paradigm shift. I was innately peaceful by nature, even as a child, but I didn't have this ability. Because it certainly is not mine nor anybody's. It is the guru principle which works, as I said, that anything that happens in life is viewed through the lens of the teaching. Yes, we have decades of hardwired conditioning behind us, so we tend to repeat our patterns. But even when we do, this light shines and brings to our awareness that patterns were repeated. So the me loses its stranglehold in daily living. This happened to me, that happened to me, someone said this to me, someone did this to me. That to me gets erased. And then it is witnessed, everything just happens. Everything happens. That is why it is said in the Gita that while everyone is asleep, the yogi is awake. Everyone is asleep because they are lost in the living dream of life. The yogi is awake. And because the yogi is awake, the yogi is established in Sukha Shanti. And the ordinary person is living with a highly troubled mind. It is as if one is now no longer obsessing about one's troubles and problems, but one is obsessing about peace and its attributes, which are qualities of the self with a capital S. For example, silence, a quality of the unmanifest. That is the shift. That is the turnaround. Everything starts getting recalibrated. My value systems change. My values change. It reminds me of something which I have mentioned before. A friend of mine who is now 83 years old has a son who is 50. The son is extremely wealthy, a multi-millionaire in US dollars. And his constant dialogue is, if there's any problem, I'll take care of it. Any problem, I'll take care of it. Any problem, I'll take care of it. And things were going wrong in his life, especially on the parenting front. And so his father was trying to tell him that you have a situation at hand which you are not able to resolve in your family. And he says, Dad, any problem, I'll take care of it. And the father got livid and he told his son, how can you take care of the problems in your life when you yourself are the problem? And the son was shocked. And this is what the guru does. It tells the individual, the ego with its sense of doership, you are the problem. Turn around, go within instead of without. Instead of being obsessed by names, shapes, and forms, turn around. What is that which enables you to see through your physical eyes? Isn't that more important than what you see? Because in order to see what you see, that has to be present. So obviously, which is more important? When you watch a movie, isn't the screen more important than the movie? Because without the screen, you can't watch the movie. But you are lost in the characters, the heroes, and the villains, and the screen is relegated to the background. And if we go a step further, what about the one watching the movie on the screen? You see, this becomes a regression into the unmanifest. The obsession with the manifest breaks down. If I keep seeing others all my life, life will constantly present me with others to see, and everyone's limitless proof for themselves in their own lives is that they are most at peace in deep sleep, because in deep sleep, neither are they others nor themselves. That is the proof. What more proof do we require? That the presence of deep sleep is the absence of the other and myself. And nobody has gotten up the next morning and complained that they slept well the night before. Imagine that. All right. If anyone would like to share anything or ask anything, then please do so now. Yes, Harshani.
Welcome. Thank you so much for this session. I was able to join. I'm from Toronto, able to join because of this time, and I have listened to your class for many, many times, and also Ramesh's. So my question about, is about the guru. Is it possible to have many gurus, or your higher self, or you have to confine to one guru? Like you said, you went to one guru. Could it come in many forms, many gurus?
Yes, it's a good question you have asked, Harshani. It is not possible to have many gurus simply because there is only one self. It is possible to have many teachers and many influences in one's life, no doubt. One could draw inspiration and get insights from different teachers, different teachings. But the guru is only one because, as I said, the guru is nothing but a reflection of one's own higher self. Or, as Bhai Sahib said, you cannot run a race, a horse race, riding two horses at the same time. You see? So, now who is that one guru amongst the many I consider my gurus is the question to be asked.
All right.
And the answer is astonishingly simple. The one who has delivered me the deepest peace in daily living. There is no other criteria to my knowledge. That is the only criteria. The one who I think about all the time, whose teaching I think about all the time, and where I tend to constantly go back while I am exploring the landscape. Does that help answer your question?
Yes. What I meant was like, yes, I think you're saying just one guru in different forms. Your guru could be in different forms. That's what I meant, right? But what you're saying is there should be only one guru. Well, let me elaborate on my answer. So when I'm quite at peace with myself, but by no means the permanent peace. But right now, I don't think of one guru. But whatever I have listened to Sadhama for about maybe more than 20 years. So from here and there, whatever that means to my mind, it doesn't come as one thing. But I
Well,
right now.
I would not worry about it because it is
Okay.
so rightly said that you do not find the guru finds you.
Yes, right.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah. So in different situation, whatever, this is my higher self will find me. Thank you. Yes, thank you very
Okay, take care.
much. Yes.
Yes, Kamla.
Namaskar, Gautam ji. Can you
Namaste.
hear me properly?
Yes.
Yeah. Namaskar to everyone. This is my second time in your session. I am very, very grateful. I am following you in the YouTube channel, and I am learning a lot. And today, my question for you is, before you said the guru answer the devotee, you are the problem, right? So I did not understand which problem. Why did he answer, you are the problem?
The father told his son, who kept saying
Okay.
he'll handle all his problems,
Yes.
told his son, but you are the problem.
Yes. Okay. Sorry,
So
but why? Why? I did not understand.
because of the way he was handling his children and his family, which he could not see. You see, we are blind to our faults. So I use that analogy to say that the guru, the spiritual guru, points out that the ego with its sense of doership is the problem. So if you have many people in your life whom you tend to blame and criticize, and you feel your life is full of these problematic people, the guru points out to you that it is your whole approach which itself is the problem, because you are attributing individuality to these people in your life, whereas they are all having the same hand of God above them. That is the way I meant to explain it. It is the ego with its preconceived ideas and notions and its enhanced sense of separation which is the problem. And it is the problem because it takes away peace of mind in daily living. So this is what the guru does. The guru steps in to say, hey, it is not what transpires in your life, but rather your attitude to life, which you have to look at. You see, that is what is meant.
Okay. So what I understood is his father is answering according the attitude of his son to the life, right?
Yes, to his children.
To his children, I mean.
Yeah, in their case. In their case. Yes?
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay. Yes, Vikram. Sorry, one sec. I'm trying to unmute you. Yeah. Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, Vikram. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, Gautam. It's such a pleasure to see you again. I don't have a question, but I have two experiences to share with you.
Sure.
One was I had a dream of you, and there is a Chola bronze in Victoria and Albert Museum of Shiva Parvati and Skanda, and the Skanda statue is missing. So I had a dream of you as Skanda, and this was like a few months ago. And the second experience I had when we did the meditation together in Thiruvannamalai, I had an intense sensation that I was this black body in Padmasana, and I was just absorbing light, and I could see light coming from your forehead, from your Ajna Chakra, and coming to me. And I don't know what it meant, but it was a really, really moving experience. And I've never shared this with you. So I think on the guru principle, I thought maybe worthwhile sharing these two points with you.
Thank you. I'm glad these are nice things to see and dream about, rather than if I took some asuric or demonic form. You see, these are all aspects of the one self. And in the Indian pantheon of gods and goddesses, these are all aspects of that one divine, right? With different qualities. And so these sometimes come into the subtle states to our awareness and then deliver what they are meant to deliver. That is the beauty of it. It doesn't really require Vikram's assistance or help. This is called grace, Vikram. This is really the beauty of it, because on the path of knowledge, Gyan Yoga, it tends to get very left-brained at times. And so when we get insights, intuitions, dreams, visions, they are not to be discounted. I mean, ultimately, you could say everything is a dream, but everything is also a revelation. An aspect of consciousness is revealing itself. For my reconfirmation, perhaps, for some light to shine through. And that is why I also feel it is important for people to maintain diaries, because what will happen is when they write down their insights, their experiences, whatever it may be, their understanding also, it is in retrospect when they see their journey, they get to learn a lot. While it's happening, maybe we don't tend to. But when you look back on your spiritual journey, things start revealing themselves and a pattern is found. So thank you for sharing that. And I hope to see you in Thiruvannamalai again. If I'm not sure if you're coming, but I hope
I am coming. All booked here. Looking forward.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, Asha.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Gautam. Namaskar. And this is my second time. I don't have words to express my gratitude again. Before getting into the question, actually, before getting into an experience after I had been with you last time, I wanted to ask just one question: is that how will I know that the guru is accepting me, or the guru will find me? Like, if he is living in a different country, like how you are living in Bombay and I'm living in Canada. So if your teachings really helped me a lot, so how do I know, or how can I, you know, pray to God that you should accept me as your disciple?
Asha, see, this question is misplaced.
Okay.
The guru is not interested in accepting or rejecting anyone.
Okay.
I would say be wary of such a guru. You see, there's no criteria. First of all, a guru doesn't consider himself or herself a guru. That is the first point. Now, my teacher expressed this beautifully. Once someone came to his satsang and asked him, "Sir, are you my guru?" And his reply was, "It depends. If you consider yourself a disciple, then I am your guru." You see, there is no vested interest on the part of the guru. It is up to us to decide. And if we have a doubt, then we keep exploring. So simple. I hope this helps answer your question.
Yeah, but why I get more attracted towards your teachings, or it helps me a lot in daily life, is because it's very simple and it's to the core point. And it's, you know, the way you explain, the way you are so calm and, you know, so quiet. And so it's like, you know, really helping us to get that energy, the vibes that you get from a guru or whatever. I don't know how it is, because it's for the first time that I'm getting into this journey. So when the other gurus, I explored 2 or 3 gurus, I wouldn't tell or reveal the name, that's not right. You know, you find it difficult because there are strict rules. You have to do this, otherwise you won't find God. You have to do this, otherwise it's difficult to, you know, grow as a good disciple. You can't become a good disciple unless you follow this discipline or routine in your life. Sometimes it's not possible to follow the routine sometimes. But yes, as you say, that just remain in that beingness, you know, and be aware that it's a consciousness, or be as a witness, as a third person. So your simplicity really helps one to understand the self, you know, what you are, who am I, and everything that, as Ramana Maharishi said, to explore. So that really resonates a lot, and you feel comfortable. You know, it's not like the guru is with a stick and then you have to do everything. So that really resonates. So because you live in Bombay and I live in Canada, so sometimes, you know, I don't know if in person is important, or, you know, something else.
You see, the thing is that for you, this teaching resonates a lot. Yeah. Someone else may prefer a strict guru. Now, the Sufi way is very strict. The Sufi way is all about commitment and obedience. And you mentioned the stick. I must tell you, I have a friend whose guru used to keep a stick by his side. And my friend said that no other guru would have worked for him, because he needed a nice spanking every now and then. So different strokes for different folks. For you, this is appealing because it's not rigid, it is not strict, and so on and so forth. So it appeals to you. And that is all we have to be concerned with. What appeals to us the most, that is it. So simple. And you see, distance is irrelevant. I'll tell you why. It is irrelevant and relevant, but it is irrelevant because everything is appearing in your consciousness. Where you are sitting right now, I am appearing within your own consciousness, not apart from it. So can I be closer than that? You see? Yes, in the world of form, in the physical dimension, the dimension of time and space, we are apart. But whether we speak long distance, meditate together, there is only one consciousness, not two. So distance in that sense does not matter. Tomorrow, if you have the finances, have the time, have the inclination, you are more than welcome to come home for a satsang. But if not, I wouldn't stress. Now, you see, this question is more relevant Perhaps in the pre-internet age, because there was no choice but for people drawn to masters to go and stay with them, whether it is Shirdi Sai Baba, Ramakrishna, Ramana Maharshi, Nisargadatta Maharaj, Sri Aurobindo, and on the list goes. I personally feel they also were at a big advantage because their yearning was so strong that it took them to the doorstep of the guru. And mind you, this is the pre-Google Maps era. And even the pre-aeroplane era, traveling by ship. So, in that age and time belonged the Sufi mystic Bhai Sahib. I think he dropped his body in the 1960s, if I'm not mistaken. So, his disciple who was with him asked him this very question: what is the difference between a disciple of yours living abroad, far away from you, rarely meeting you, versus someone who is living in your city and coming to meet you? He said, in terms of grace, there is no difference. But he said that for someone who hadn't met him at all, but was immersed in his teachings, his system, his traditions, spiritual traditions, that person had the ability to become the perfect disciple, whereas someone who was with him physically had the potential to become a master. And when he was questioned further as to why this distinction, he said, because the body is included in the process. The body is included, referring to his body and the disciple's body for a certain transmission to take place. So I feel it's a different age, it's a different era. I don't know what and how this kind of dynamic will transform into in the future. But I would say that the internet is a beautiful thing because we are able to speak and meet with people across the globe, which we could not have done earlier. So I think the glass is half full and not half empty. All right? Okay. Yes, Abhi.
Hi Gautam, long time no hear.
How are you doing?
Yeah, things are going good. I mean, my family and all, it's going peaceful. How are you doing?
All well, thank you.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, lately I've just kind of I'm going through a couple of questions, and since I saw the satsang, I thought I would just join and ask you. The first question, I mean, can I ask a couple of questions, or should I just start off with one?
I think let's start off with one because we have just 5 6 minutes left.
Fair enough. Is liberation permanent?
Yes.
But the thing is that I have read about a lot of these saints who've been, I mean, like for example, Ramakrishna, he said that Vivekananda was a realized being in some other world who was asked to come here to perform certain duties. So in that case, if he was already realized and he's coming onto earth, then what exactly is that then? I mean, once we become part of God, do we again come back into this aspect of wanting to explore the manifest again?
It is not about exploring the manifest anymore. For such beings, it is God Himself who descends into the manifest human form for a particular mission to be fulfilled. That is the compassion of God.
Okay.
So it's not about being fully liberated or not. The liberation has happened. But you know, let's keep it simple as far as we are concerned and what liberation means for us. Imagine all our life we feel we are in a jail. We are jailed by our circumstances, by our body, by the events that happen to us. And then someone gives us the key, the warden gives us the key and says, hey, there's a way, please come out of it. And we find the way out of it. We are not going to lock ourselves back in, you see. So, in that sense, liberation happens once. Yes, in daily living, as I said, because of hardwired conditioning, we find we repeat patterns, we repeat what we call our mistakes, because you see, it takes time for the new conditioning to override the earlier conditioning. That is a gradual process, and gradual is very safe. It is better than a sudden Shaktipat or sudden catharsis because that can fuse, it can blow a fuse. So It appears liberation is gradual, although it is sudden eventually. But once liberated, then there is no coming back. That is my understanding. Someone else may present a different understanding of it.
But why is it that there is different understandings of the same truth?
Because everyone is shaped differently. Everyone has a different brain, a different worldview, a different experience of life, and shares what they share.
But this is not an interpretation of life or manifest, right? This is an interpretation of the unmanifest, which should be completely devoid of what it looks, what your perspective of life should be, right?
But the manifest is the reflection of the unmanifest. They are not two.
So, I mean, if it's just a reflection of the unmanifest, then shouldn't the reflection be somewhat similar in how it's presented then?
How can it be? Because unicity became multiplicity. The one has become the many forms. And those forms are the ones we like and the ones we don't like.
Okay.
But they are not apart from the unmanifest. The manifestation is a reflection of the source within itself, not
okay.
apart
Okay.
from
okay.
it.
Okay. And like just dream state, say we waking up and dream state. We are in a dream, we wake up. The waking up is the liberation part. Now, my question is, in life, we go through dreams that affect the way we live. I mean, so many stories about Shirdi Sai coming in people's dreams and that influences their action. Is it possible for the manifest to come in and affect the unmanifest itself? Because we are using these analogies.
How can the manifest affect the unmanifest? The source is totality. The source is all there is.
What is the source? If it's when you talk about the totality then, and there is this manifest that's happening, eventually, how do I, because I do, I'm not realized, I don't know what the unmanifest is. Is there a way to stop the manifest itself from happening?
Who is asking this question? An instrument in the manifest world is asking if there's a way it can be stopped. It is like my teacher would say, a painting can never know why its painter painted it. A painting can never know why its painter painted it. When the world is meant to come to an end, it will come to an end as per the grand design.
So is there a possible end?
There certainly is.
Okay, so is it like...
Even the end of this world has been described in texts like Dasbodh by Samarth Ramdas.
But I'm saying, what you're talking about is the yugas, right? But I'm talking even the end of the creation of cycles itself.
Why don't we bring this down to our daily living?
I'm ready to.
That is what we have been speaking about. Let's focus on that.
No,
so for
somewhere...
example, for example, when I am able to tap into the silence in my daily living, and silence is a portal to the unmanifest, then I'm living this concept, what you're speaking about. When my thinking mind is silent, free of engagement and troubles and problems, that is the quality of the one self, capital S, the unmanifest. So when we bring it down to daily living, when I see that I really accept everyone in my life for the way God created them, I am seeing through the eye of unicity, which is a quality of the unmanifest. Unicity means singularity and not duality. Manifest is duality, the framework of duality. So I bring these concepts down to a more tangible way of living in life, the result being peace of mind. And that is why Ramana Maharshi said, the state of equanimity is the state of bliss. That's it. The state of equanimity, which I would also say is the Buddha's middle path, where we are no longer polarized by duality and extremes, but our pendulum finds its center point. Equilibrium, peace of mind, sukha shanti. All right?
Yeah, fair enough.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. And one last question from Tanmay, and then we'll end. Yes, Tanmay. Sorry, I'm not able to unmute you for some reason. I don't know. Can any volunteer help unmute Tanmay?
Tanmay, you'll have to unmute yourself now. You have the permission.
Okay, maybe the source does not want Tanmay to speak, is it? Tanmay, can you hear me? No. All right, we'll have to keep that for next time. So if we can just sit together for a minute in silence, I would prefer it if I can see all of y'all, especially those who have unmanifested themselves by blocking their cameras. You see, as most of us know, we have probably just entered some troubled times and troubling times to come. What can we do about it on an individual level? And as Goldsmith would say, let your presence be a benediction wherever you go. Whether it is you're walking on the streets, going to an airport, a restaurant, or in your own home, the peace, let that peace be a benediction to whoever is in your space. Everyone is in your space. The stranger on the road is appearing within your consciousness. Your loved one is in your consciousness. The one you dislike is appearing within your consciousness. There is nothing apart from the one consciousness. That one consciousness, which is enabling this body to speak and your body to listen, is one. Electricity is electricity, whether it runs through the toaster or the fridge or the juicer. Electricity is electricity. This is the core meaning of Advaita. A Dvait, not two, appears as two. Not so. So if one is at peace within, then one is offering that peace to all forms that appear within one's own consciousness. And then we find the flag of peace, the white flag of peace, fluttering high across the three worlds, past, present, and future, earth, heaven, and hell. Thank you.